Hello, good afternoon. This is Shirley Tabb here in the nation's capital with Social Work Today. And I want to start out by welcoming everybody to the show this afternoon here in the District of Columbia. And get on the phone, let people know that they can also listen by phone. If they are not connected to the computer, they can listen to the phone at area code 605-475-1600 or 1-716-748-0144. Now, to call and talk on the air with me and my guest today, feel free to call us at 1-888-429-5471. Let me give that out again, 1-888-429-5471. And you can call people and let them know that they can listen by the, on their phone at 1-605-475-1600. And I'll give that information out more as we go on. I'm really so excited today because I have a wonderful guest whose name is Reverend Maria Dancing Heart Hoagland. And I'm just calling her Maria because she is such a wonderful spirit and open-hearted person until I don't want to be formal with her. So I'm calling her Maria. And just tell you a little bit about this very interesting guest who is an author and also a United Church of Christ minister. And I'll just give you a little bit about her background because she has a wonderful background and she'll be telling you some things about herself. But Reverend Maria Dancing Heart Hoagland was born in Tokyo, Japan, a daughter of Lutheran missionaries, and she spent her childhood growing up in Japan, attending Japanese public schools through the eighth grade. And as a result, this lady is bilingual and bicultural and has used her language and cultural skills in a variety of ways through the years. After finishing high school at Canadian Academy in Kobe, Japan, she moved to the U.S. to go to school, to go to college. And she graduated from Yale College and later attended seminary and received her Master's of Divinity from Chicago Theological Seminary in 1984. And I mean, I could just go on. She has a wonderful biography. And one thing that I was glad to know when I first met her is that she has worked with hospice, which is a labor of love for me with the hospice programs here in the District of Columbia. And having worked in hospice, she has been able to weave death and dying into living. So with that being said, and without any further ado, Maria, welcome to the show today.
Thank you so much, Shirley.
Yes, yes. So I looked at your books. The covers are just phenomenal. I don't know who did the illustrations, but they are just beautiful books. So why don't you get started and tell us about about the books. You have three books, right? You've written three books.
Well, I've written two, and one of them has four editions. They've kind of gone around the world, that one has.
Wow.
And I have, yeah, then I'm working on a third one. I hope to get that out very soon.
Okay, okay. So what are the names of the books?
Well, the first one is called The Last Adventure of Life.
Yes.
And it has all kinds of inspirational stories, scripture, prayer, poetry from all walks of life, kind of a, some people say it's a treasure trove of richness, not just about grief and loss and dying, but yes. life itself. Kind of a yes. conscious living, conscious dying book. Yeah.
Okay. Go on, Maria.
The second one is called The Most Important Day of Your Life, Are You Ready? And this is a book that more explains how hospice taught me so much and how hospice expanded my spiritual life especially.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so where can people get the books?
They can get them at my website, which is Change With Courage, changewithcourage.com. And they're also available online at Amazon.
Okay. Yep. Now, do you have a website where people can go and get in touch with you if they need you to speak somewhere or just want to tell us a little bit about the Auristic, is that what it's called?
Oh, yes, the Auric Healing. Yes, well, the website to go to, again, would be the changewithcourage.com. And then if you go to changewithcourage.com/blog, that's where I post a column that I'm writing at the Mason County Journal here where I live in Shelton or just outside of Olympia, Washington.
Okay.
And then I have another site, and that's the one where I do the energy work and energy clearing work for people who are grieving or feeling stuck for whatever reason.
Yes.
And that site is called runningthebars.com.
Okay.
Runningthebars.com. And the auric clearing that you mentioned earlier, this is the most powerful energy clearing work I've learned to date, and I can do it long distance. So all we have to do is connect by email and then maybe by phone and or Skype, and then we can talk about what the person wants to have happen and put out the intentions for this clearing or cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they lie down and rest in the comfort of their home mm-hmm. while I do the work at the other end, and I clear out their chakras, all the attachments from their whole life, really, so they get a real good reset and clearing, so it's much lighter and people feel more confident, more full of their own power, and can proceed with life in a much more powerful way.
That really sounds wonderful. That really, really sounds wonderful. I would be interested in having that done, too. Mm-hmm. Now, tell us, Maria, a little bit more about how you have been able to, after you became a hospice counselor, and mm-hmm. how exactly that just started to change the way that you were thinking or the way that you were living, the way you perceived life and death, maybe. And I saw one of the quotes on one of your sites where somebody said, I think it was John Lennon, who mm-hmm. said he didn't believe in death or there is no death. It's just getting out of one car into another.
Right.
I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? That was on my email, I think. And,
yeah.
John Lennon did say that, and he's one of my heroes. You know, he sings about imagining peace, and gosh, the hospice work that I do, I feel, is helping to create peace on the planet, because if we don't have to fear death, then what is there to fear, really, you know? And I believe as we all do our homework around death and grief and change, we are helping to create a more peaceful world, and it breaks down the barriers between countries and cultures and everything, because we all are born and then we all must die one day, and this is a reality that the more we comprehend and the more we understand in our full being, then we can have a better life, I think. Because
I agree.
You know, there's no help in fearing death. And when we fear death, we really fear life, too, in a way.
It's true, because if we fear death, then we are so stuck thinking and being afraid of dying until we don't get to live.
Exactly.
Not a quality life.
Exactly. So, yeah, hospice taught me a whole lot in that regard about how we can open up to all the aspects of life. And sometimes the aspects that we fear the most are really the ones that can change and help us grow the most. Even grief, you know.
Yeah.
People are very sad and sometimes miserable when they're grieving, but what they don't realize sometimes is how much grief will help them grow and become more of who they really are. And then they can be a stronger person and live a more powerful and profound life.
What has your experience been, Maria, when you were working in hospice, when people lose children or babies, when parents end up having to bury a child, which seems just so out of character because we don't expect to bury our children.
Right, right. And that is probably the most, if not at least one of the most difficult challenges of loss, you know, is when a child dies. Or recently I had a woman contact me whose son committed suicide. And, it sounds like her heart is still broken. I remember suggesting that she have an auric clearing just because that would perhaps help her heart heal a little bit more.
Yes.
But that's an area I didn't get too much involved in. Actually, I dealt with that more when I was doing my clinical pastoral education work back in CPE days when I was a student chaplain, you know.
Yes.
And I actually spent half a year doing work at the Denver Children's Hospital.
Okay.
And that's when I witnessed, you know, children, even babies, even infants dying. Wow, it was pretty heartbreaking to focus and, you know, work with those parents because they really were heartbroken. And there's not always a whole lot you can say. You know, a lot of times when people are in deep grief, the best thing you can do is just be with them.
That's
and
true.
Hold them and stand by, you know.
Yes.
And just be a witness to what they're going through.
So what has been the reaction to some of your books and some of your work with people? Are you starting to see how your work is really, really enriching the lives of people? Are you getting feedback? So what's that like?
Yes, even lately I've been especially getting some emails and some messages from people, even sometimes the dying people. You know, typically I find that the people who read my books are more the hospice workers, volunteers, the family members of those who are dying, so that they can help and support those who are going through the end of life. But recently, a friend of mine in Sedona, I lived in Sedona for a period of time, and what a beautiful place. But a friend of mine there told me that a man who has ALS and who is facing his own death, he's an avid reader, and he got a hold of both of my books and is sending out emails to his friend saying how he's enjoying my books. And for instance, he's a musician, and I guess he recognized the piece of music. I have a beautiful Shaker song, or kind of a Quaker song, at the very end of my book on how can I keep from singing. You know, it's that song, "My life goes on in endless song, above earth's lamentation. I hear the real, though far off, hymn that hails a new creation." But anyway, he, in his music days, had sung this song with his friends or, you know, with a choir. So he mentioned that, and he mentioned one of my stories that he liked so much. It's a bittersweet story about the sandpiper on the beach and this little girl who, it turned out, was dying, but she befriended this man who seemed kind of depressed, and he writes the story. Well, the author is actually an older woman, but it's just an amazing little story called The Sandpiper to Bring You Joy or something like that. Yeah, and he commented on that story because he appreciated it so much.
That is awesome. That is just, it really, really should just make you feel so good to know that you are helping our people like that. You are using your life to really, really help people. And I was talking with a counselor once, and I was telling her that I really was looking forward to doing some hospice work, volunteering, and because I love to work with families. And she said, but Shirley, that just seems to be, that would just make me so depressed. And I said, oh, no, it's just the opposite for me, because where else, what other kind of work can you do where you can actually go right up to the gates of heaven with somebody and help go cross over? So, I mean, what more can you do that's any more powerful than that? So she just looked at me and smiled. Obviously, she had never looked at it that way.
Right. Well, you know what I say, because things weren't turning out in a really happy and joyful way for me in my parish work, and that's why I went looking and, you know, searching for what else was possible, and that's how the hospice work came about. And I like to say that, well, it's hospice that brought the joy back to my ministry and my life.
How
but it's
about
true,
that?
You know, it's really true that when you are doing what you're meant to do, and that's really, I think, what this is for me. It's a calling and a real something that I've been gifted by God, I guess you could say. And, you know, I love talking with people about end of life and about the other side and kind of planting new seeds, or maybe they know something I don't know, you know, or their religion teaches something else. And then I learn more because it just keeps expanding the way I view death, because it's such a rich topic, really. It's such a mystery.
It is such a mystery.
You know, none of us know exactly what's going to happen, and so it's fascinating to imagine and to hear what different cultures say about it.
Yes, it certainly is. It is. Now, tell me a little bit more about the thought behind the book that the most important day of your life?
Well, that title, the idea of it came to me through Buddhist, a Buddhist perspective, because in Buddhism, they feel that the day you die is a very significant, maybe the most significant day of your life, next to maybe the day you were born.
Yes.
And they feel that the higher vibration you are when you die, the more, the higher level you get to go in the next realm.
Okay.
So you really want to be prepared for what's coming. And, you know, it is coming for all of us one day. So rather than push it under the rug the way we do in America, for you know, most of the time, not everybody. But I wanted to kind of wake Americans up a little bit. That's why I put this title, you know, The Most Important Day of Your Life, Are You Ready? And just to encourage people to think about it and talk about it and realize that it's not the scary boogeyman that we think. You know, it's really a time of liberation
that
we get to go home to our true spiritual home.
Exactly.
You know, the African-American term is homegoing, I believe.
It is.
I remember seeing that somewhere.
You are right. It's homegoing, your homegoing ceremony. That's what they call funerals. We call funerals homegoings. And I heard Steve Harvey say that the most important day that I think he said the most important day of your life is not so much as he did say the two most important days, the day that you were born and the day what happened to you was when you found your purpose. And that's awesome, because once you found that purpose, then you were out there then like shot out of a cannon. And before your career, you just hadn't found that fulfillment, even though you were doing God's work. But once you found what that calling was, that was liberating.
That's true.
That was really liberating.
True. Yes, yes. And to this day, you know, when I find a new way to do this work or a new idea, it's always captivating, because I'm drawn to that work and that energy. Or when I find somebody who's doing something new in an old area around end of life. Like I just wrote an article that I hope will get published, but there's an amazing 30-something woman in Seattle right near here named Katrina Spade, and she's changing the whole way we do the after-death care. She's teaching people how we can put our bodies back to compost. So, you know, instead of dust to dust, it's compost to compost. And the young people are teaching us what's possible, and so we can have a more sustainable after-death care where we're not, because even you know, we think of cremation as being a very more sustainable way to bury the dead, because it doesn't take up so much space.
That's right.
Come to find out, you really burn a lot of fossil fuel or whatever you're using to burn when you cremate a body.
Right.
So perhaps this composting will be a whole new way to solve a problem on the planet.
It makes sense because I think about that whenever I'm in an area here in the Washington, Virginia, Maryland area, that we have some huge old cemeteries. And when I go out there and I look at the, because I like to go visit cemeteries, and people say that I'm morbidly curious, but I think there's so much history out there.
Absolutely.
And
yes.
I do. And I look at all of these tombstones, and I just think, well, you know, as we all will die, how is this going to affect the amount of land that you have to use? I mean, if everybody's having ground burials, and then they did get away from these tall structures, the little mini mausoleums, of these size of a small room. But I just thought, well, what's going to happen? Even with the mausoleums, the modern-day mausoleums, where people who want to be entombed, and I'm thinking, well, what's going to happen in 100 years? You're not going to tell me this thing is going to be here forever and ever. The day's going to come when they're going to have to decide, you know, we need to do something with these bodies that's been left over.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think what's going to happen, and we are really using up a lot of land and land resources when that 30-something-year-old woman has a point. We could do better than that.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And, you know, the young people are leading the way, I think, in many ways.
They certainly are.
There are young people working on free energy machines and all kinds of things out there that we don't even know about. Yeah,
exactly. So the world is starting to change.
Yes, it is indeed.
It's starting to change.
Thank God for that.
Yes. One thing, goal that I have, and mm-hmm. I'm struggling with it, Maria, because mm-hmm. in the African-American community, now you are bicultural and you've traveled all over the world, but mm-hmm. with us, mm-hmm. it is just such a taboo to even start talking, trying to broach the subject. You start talking with somebody, and they, oh, I don't want to talk about that. But it's going to come when you will, you must talk about it, because if you outlive your parents, and hopefully you will, mm-hmm. You are going to have to deal with some of this stuff. But it's so hard getting people to embrace it and to listen. And in this area, you may have heard of the deaf cafes.
Yes, yes.
And I went to one by accident. I was in the library, and mm-hmm. I saw this flyer, Deaf mm-hmm. Cafe, and I was through doing whatever I was in the library doing, and I said, well, this starts at 5 or 6 o'clock. I'm going to check this out. So I went in there, and uh-huh. I've been going back since, because I like the concept. It's non-denominational. People come and sit, and it's not a script. It's no agenda. You just talk from your heart, whatever it is you want to talk about.
Exactly. And whatever aspect of death. You know, it's not even a grief group or anything in particular. It's just a place where you have permission to speak about death.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And it's been very beneficial to me. As a matter of fact, because I'm a social worker, and one of my social work colleagues, I've actually had two people go with me, and when the others I've invited said, Deaf Cafe, why would you want to go to a Deaf Cafe? What's a Deaf Cafe? But the two who went, one has already crossed over. And he crossed over about a month, maybe 6 weeks after her visit. She was found dead. And she was really, she was excited about going, and she sat and she listened. As a matter of fact, I think she went with me twice. Mm-hmm. And I think about her often, but I'm going.
How special. Wow.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just, and that's why I don't worry about her in the afterlife, because she was just so open to ideas, and she went right with me. And
That reminds me of a story that I have, kind of a synchronistic story, where I have a song, a piece that Mary Black sings. Mm-hmm. It's in the end of my chapter, is it 6? Anyway, it's called Bless the Road, and it's this beautiful song that sounds like somebody is saying goodbye to a child.
Hmm.
Well, I looked into it further, and I contacted Steve Cooney, the author, who's a musician who sings or who plays with Mary Black, and it turns out it's a story of a saying farewell to a lover. You know, like a goodbye song, because their time together had come to an end. But it's a beautiful love song, a love goodbye song.
Yes.
And I was so moved by it that I got his permission to put it in my book. And then I have it in music form with my talks that I sometimes take, you know, to when I speak.
Yes.
Well, soon after my very first book, The Last Adventure of Life, the one with the butterflies on it, because it has four editions out now. The most recent one has the Sedona Red Rocks on it, the Cathedral Rock, with hot air balloons going up with a sense of freedom. But the first book had these butterflies on it, and I was presenting that at one of our local hospices, and so all these volunteers showed up from a group, I think it was in Tacoma, and little did I know, but one of the women in that group had breast cancer. And she heard this song and was so moved by it. She was crying, apparently, and then spoke about it to the people around her. Mm-hmm. Well, about, I don't know, a few months later, I heard from her friends and family, and they wanted to know how to get a hold of this music because they remember it had meant so much to her.
Yeah.
And the whole thing just blew me away at the time, you know, because I thought, wow, little did I know that someone would hear this song before, as they were getting ready to die, and then that it would mean so much to them, and then that the loved ones would want to hear it at her funeral or memorial service.
Awesome. So it's amazing.
Awesome. Yeah, I would recommend that piece, by the way. It's called Bless the Road.
Bless the Road.
By Mary Black, sung by Mary Black, written by Steve Cooney, and it's in my book at the end of chapter 6.
You know, Maria, it's just so interesting how God sends us messages and how we learn from each other and how things happen. Because I had thinking, Lord, how do I try to reach out in this community, in and not just the African-American community, but anybody who is reluctant to open themselves up and to just receive the information. So I said, okay, well, I will start going out and speaking, but I will also incorporate music, something that's perhaps where they may not hear how I'm articulating it, but maybe in the message in the music will get people to thinking. And so you just...
Yeah, because music so speaks to the heart, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so open. It's the language that is not really, it's a universal language because music just opens the heart for all of us. And you don't really even need a certain language to do music. Yeah, and it does open people up to something that they otherwise might not be open to, things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So you just confirmed that for me, because otherwise just talking to people, I thought maybe I would also maybe start trying to get people to open up and just prepare, go and do, if you wanna do not resuscitate, then put that in writing, let your doctor and your family and everybody know what it is that you want to happen or not happen should you not be in a position to make that decision.
Exactly.
And if we are going to, and what gets me is how we go to church and we prepare based on what the belief is, we prepare to go home and be with the Lord and see loved ones and all this. But few of us are actually preparing for it. We prepare to get married. We prepare to retire. We make all these other preparations that may not even take place. But as you said earlier at the opening of the show, we know we are going to die. So why are we not preparing?
Yes, yes. You know, I have a quote at the very front of the second book, The Most Important Day book.
Yeah.
And it's from the NHPCO, you know, the hospice website.
Yeah.
And it goes like this. Funny how you'll plan every aspect of every trip except the most important one you'll ever take.
Exactly. We just, because, and I think it's just kind of obvious for us that people don't prepare for that because they don't want to accept it. Though they all know it. That we will die, people we love. A lot of times I'm out in the community and I'm just, I love watching people and I'll look at somebody and their interactions and everything and I think to myself, wow, will you tell this person before the night is over that you love them? Because, or will they tell you how much they appreciate you? Because this could be the last opportunity that they have. But we just go on like, oh, we got plenty of time. And I have a granddaughter. She's 16 now, but I remember when she may have been 13 or 14, and we were riding along, and we were talking about her father because she's close to her father. And I said, well, Kevlin, What's the best time that you ever had with your dad? If you had to tell somebody the greatest time you ever spent with your father, what would it be? And mm-hmm. she said, oh, Granny, I really can't say because it's been so many, and there'll be so many more. Mm. And I did not have the nerve to tell her, baby, not necessarily. So I didn't go there with her, but I missed that teachable moment, because here is a child who has no concept of people dying, and she mm-hmm. just said, I mean, I remember as a child, I never thought that my parents wouldn't be with me all my life. It mm-hmm. just never dawned on me, and we don't think about those things.
No, we don't, and we don't talk about them.
There's we don't think about
fascinating Canadian. Have you heard of a Canadian gentleman who does similar work as I do? His name is Stephen Jenkinson, and he's written a book, Die Wise, I think it's called. But what I would really recommend to folks is going to the Google and just Googling Grief Walker. That's one word, Grief Walker.
Okay.
And check out, there's a Vimeo, you know, like a YouTube about him and his work. And he's always talking about endings. You know, he says, well, we're really good at beginnings, but what about the endings? We forget that there's an ending to everything.
To everything. And we
everything.
Just
act. And he mm-hmm. even tears up when he talks about his children and how he realized when he, you know, was part of birthing his children that he was creating new life, but this new life was going to have to die one day, too.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
So we just don't think about that very much, and he does a good job of highlighting that and helping people weave endings back into the whole cycle of it.
Yeah, and you said Google Grief Walker?
Grief Walker. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the Vimeo.
Okay.
Yeah. That is out there.
And,
I highly recommend it. You'll find it quite fascinating. I also have a whole YouTube channel
that
you can find just by Googling my name, Maria Dancing Heart Hoagland.
Okay.
And it's at YouTube.
Yeah.
And I have, you know, short snippets on how to work with people who are in deep grief.
Okay.
What were some of my highlight moments doing hospice work. I have a variety there. I have some sermons that I've preached, too, like at Unity Churches and
CFL. Oh, I can't wait to hear them.
Yeah, Centers for Spiritual Living. They're wonderful opportunities for me to get out and help people better prepare for this inevitable time in our lives.
Yeah.
That really, as we learn about it, we find is very mystical and mysterious and opens up a whole nother realm. It's really the spiritual realm that we are gifted with when we start discovering more about end of life and the mystery between this world and the next, you know?
It is a wonderful mystery. Let me let people know how they can call us and if they have any questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
If would like to call in and have any questions for Maria or myself, you can call 1-888-429-5471. That is 1-888-429-5471. And you just call in and ask Maria any questions, because this is just, I'm just really, really amazed at the content that we have here. And I'm just in awe of all that she has done. So if you want to call us on 1-888-429-5471. And Maria, why don't you give your websites out again, your books, let's promote your books, and I will also leave your work up on my website, too, and my Facebook page, so we can help promote your message, because you are doing a wonderful thing in the world.
Oh, thank you, Shirley. Yeah, sure. My main website is changewithcourage.com. And what you can do is just go to that site, and then I have an opt-in method, so you can just put your name and email there, and then we'll be connected, and I can send you my mini book. I have a mini book that's a PDF that if you send me your email, I can send you the intro to my book. And then at that same site, if you go to the shop page, it's a shopping site, that's where you'll see information about each of my books, and you can buy them separately, but you can also purchase them together, and I offer you a discount. They're only $25 in a bundle, so I encourage you to do that. And then my other site is, and at that Change with Courage site, there is also many, many links in my link and resources section. For instance, the link to that Grief Walker piece that I mentioned, and there's, you know, cancer-related page, there's a caregiver-related, there's a conscious living, conscious dying-related, so all kinds of resources and links there. And then the other site that I would recommend, well, actually, there are two other sites, but runningthebars.com, that's my energy work site, and if you'd like an auric clearing or a energy work healing or even just a grief counseling session with me, then that would be the place to look at. And last but not least, I create these beautiful Japanese style bundles, which are gifts that you can do for yourself, kind of a self-care gift, or for your loved ones who may be going through some kind of change or illness or end-of-life grief kinds of things. And that is soulbaskets.com. That's S-O-U-L, and then baskets with an S.com. And these are the Japanese-style, beautiful bundles that I create with Japanese furoshiki, which are beautiful cloths that are made. And these are the ways the Japanese have always carried their gifts.
Yeah.
So it's a beautiful green way to have a cloth or kind of a scarf-like piece of cloth that has the books and the CDs and the essential oils and many of my holistic things with information sheets inside them can go to, you know, a special friend or a family member or maybe just for yourself, just a gift to give yourself.
Those sound wonderful, Maria. So talk a little bit about the essential oils. What benefit have you seen essential oils to have for people?
Mm-hmm. Essential oils are wonderful because they are very relaxing and very oxygenating. Hmm. And, of course, people who understand or know the oils, they are the lifeblood of the plants. They come from the earth.
Yeah.
And the oils are extracted by distilling the leaves and the roots and different parts of the plant.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the Young Living oils primarily, and they are very high frequency because they all come from organic or wild plants.
Yes.
And then they are distilled to the highest therapeutic degree. Mm-hmm. So they can actually, some of them, maybe at least half of them, be ingested to help heal and to help strengthen the immune system. For instance, maybe you've heard of frankincense.
Yeah.
You know, that was an oil that was brought to Jesus when he was born by the wise men. And it's a very, very healing oil. Back in the Middle Ages, it was considered, back in Jesus' time and beyond, it was considered more valuable than gold.
Wow.
Yes, and it healed just about anything. It's very, very good for the skin. It's an anti-tumoral oil, so it helps with tumors. And I heard a story about a woman whose son he had a brain tumor. So she literally kept his head wet with frankincense. You know, she had a lot of frankincense that she put on him, and the tumor went away.
Wow.
Yeah, and another woman with ovarian cancer, I believe it was, had a dream in which she saw frankincense and myrrh, and she didn't understand what this was about until she finally came across the oils. And at first she thought, you know, incense or... Anyway, she was looking around, and she finally realized when she met a young living distributor that these were oils that could heal her cancer.
Wow.
And eventually they did. Yeah, yeah. So if you're interested and open to alternative methods of healing, and not just cancer, but all kinds of things, these oils are profound, and they can really help heal, and they can help at the end of life, because I've anointed many people with the oils. I even helped one gentleman make his crossing with the oils, because he was so lacking in oxygen that he had on a whole oxygen mask. And when I came into the room, he had mentioned before that he had wanted to be anointed again. So I got out my oils, and I started putting oil like around his nose, right where the mask was. I took it off and anointed a little bit on the nose area. Then I put some on his chest and on his feet. And then I took the frankincense and put it on his brow, because frankincense is very, very appreciated by the other side. It's a favorite oil of the spiritual side.
Yeah.
And anyway, sure enough, his breathing just slowed way down, and he opened his eyes at one point and looked straight up. And his daughter said, "Oh, he's going. Wow. And I thought, well, maybe, you know, with birth and death, you never know when people are actually going to go. But he did. He slowed way down. His breathing got slower and slower. And finally, he made his passage probably within 15, 20 minutes of my entering that room.
Isn't there
You know, these oils can, they have a profound effect to relax and oxygenate. And that alone sometimes can do the trick to help people, you know, release into the next realm.
Oh, wow. I mean, you just have such wonderful stories, Maria. I wanted to ask you, what has been, in working with hospice, what has been the most profound or the most interesting or the one that just kind of superseded everything other experience that you've had, which that one is awesome right there. But
yeah, that one is pretty high on the list.
I think of another
gentleman who, he was only 50, and he had a heart murmur kind of a thing. And he would say, well, you know, many people throughout my life thought I was dying at different times, and I knew I was just fine. But he said, this time I know I'm dying, and that's why I'm on hospice, and that's why I want to talk to you, he said. And it's very unusual, usually, to have people want to speak with the spiritual counselor. You know, I mean, they'll talk with you, but sometimes quite reluctantly.
Yeah.
But he asked the nurse right off the bat, you know, that I want to talk to this woman.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to speak with him, and he clearly had a very powerful spiritual life, not particularly religious, because he had gotten turned off from religion when he was quite young, but he had lived deeply spiritually, and he really wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
You know how they say you have a life review? Often people want to talk about their past before they die.
Yeah.
And in his case, he really wanted to talk and confirm about his spiritual life before he left, you know.
Yeah.
So I got the chance to talk with him and his wife, and it was a lovely, lovely couple. They had met in England in the airport just on their way back here. So she was British and he was American, as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was this international romance, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I just enjoyed this couple so much. But what was interesting there is they told me about a woman that they had gone to speak with who could read spiritual energy off of people and tell them about themselves.
Yes.
So he and she had separate conversations with this woman before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And so after he died, I thought, well, gosh, I want to go meet this woman and see what she would have to say.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, he came through. She was doing automatic writing. You know, she was just writing what she got from the message. And she started writing what he was saying, which was that he was very grateful that I was following up with his wife and doing some bereavement work and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And then he proceeded to share something about a colleague of mine and I. We were a little bit challenged in our relationship at the time, and he gave me some good ideas to work with her. Well, then the handwriting changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And this time the message was something like, no, long time no talk, or long time no see.
Huh.
And then I realized it was my mother.
Oh.
And then the gal who was doing the recording, she says, well, this is kind of private, but I'm getting something like a miscarriage. Did you ever have a miscarriage? And I said, no, but I remember my mother did.
Yeah.
And she says, okay, let's go with that. So the next thing she's writing is, I've met my son. Well, we were three daughters, see?
Oh.
So there on the other side was my brother, and unbeknownst to me, she proceeded to share how he had grown up on the other side and what he looked like and what his name was. And then she shared that he was one of my bereavement guides. He was helping me in my work.
Isn't that awesome?
Isn't that amazing?
This lady, this is after the hospice patient had passed away?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he was sending messages.
Yes, and he had gone to her, he and his wife, so they had told me about her, and I was able to, you know, look her up and then go see her myself.
Mm-hmm. Is she still, do you still have contact information for her?
You know, I've kind of lost track of her now, yeah, but I'm sure there are many like that out there, you know, even in the D.C. area, there have got to be people who contact those from the other side, and those kind of psychics and mediums, kind of like a Sylvia Brown, only just not as well known, or a James Van Praagh, those kind of people.
Yeah, those people. Yeah, you're right.
Actually, I've met one that people might contact online. Her name is Diana White Eagle, and you can find her at Facebook. Diana White Eagle, and also Sharon Milliman. Sharon Milliman had a near-death experience, two near-death experiences, and talks and writes about them quite a bit. And she's actually going to be on a show on the 17th of April. Morgan Freeman did a interview of her and others, and it's called Back from the Dead, or back, you know, it's kind of like coming alive after dying.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be at 10 p.m. your time, two Sundays from today, I believe.
Okay, and on what medium? TV, radio?
TV, yeah, TV. Sorry, it's TV, and it's on the National Geographic Channel.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Maria. I will definitely.
Yep, and Morgan Freeman's the interviewer.
Okay.
And Sharon will be a beautiful gal. She's got this golden hair, looks like an angel. She's going to be one of the people interviewed because she's had two near-death experiences that have profoundly changed her life.
Hmm. And spell her last name, Maria.
Yes, M-I-L-L-I Milliman, I believe, M-A-N, Milliman.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's going to be on National Geographic Channel.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
On April 17, which I believe I checked and it's a Sunday.
Okay, all right, that is awesome. Well, I heard also that you will be getting your own show on BBSRadio.com.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's not BBS. It's something like it, though. It's called RealRevolution.com.
Okay.
And a gentleman, I think he's Native American background, Joel Ayaman or something. He's the one who will be helping me, you know, choreograph it, kind of get it taped and so forth. Initially, at least, I'm not going to try to do it live, but
okay.
It'll be a show that's going to be called Death Becomes You Too.
Death Becomes You Too. That sounds wonderful. The engineer has said we are out of time, but Maria, this has just been wonderful.
It has indeed. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, and I'll be in touch.
Okay, Shirley. I look forward to it, and thank you to your audience, everyone. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye. Talk to
bye.
Everybody a week from now. Bye-bye.